You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is Dr. Hal Schurz, and along with my co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchik, we come to you every week to discuss the topics that doctors discuss between themselves on every topic in healthcare imaginable. We let you in on those private discussions so that you'll be armed with the information that you need to fight for your healthcare freedom. Our show is sponsored by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, a non-for-profit tax-deductible organization that was founded by doctors who are deeply concerned with the direction that healthcare is going and offers solutions that are very different than what has been enacted by bureaucrats in Washington who believe that they know better than you do about the kind of healthcare you should have and who should deliver it to you and where. The foundation is going around the country fighting for the healthcare freedom for all Americans and trying to preserve the doctor-patient relationship, which is very much in jeopardy right now. Please go to the website www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and contribute generously to allow these people to carry on the fight on your behalf. You might not think that you need to get involved with this, but let me assure you that you do. If you're not a patient yet, you will be someday, and you'll want the doctor of your choice there to take care of you when you need him or her. Well, today I have the honor and privilege to chat with one of my dear friends, Dr. Beth Haynes. I have known Beth for over 5 years. We became acquainted when we got together fighting for healthcare and worked together in Docs for Patient Care. And Beth is a emergency room physician. She lives in California, and she's been to Washington with us a number of times. She's been a voice out there of reason and very well informed in public policy and in healthcare and healthcare matters. And she was given the opportunity to be the executive director of the Benjamin Rush Institute, which we'll learn about this morning, something that is very important, and I'm going to give her a chance to tell our listeners why that's so. So I'd like to welcome you, Beth, into the Doctor's Lounge. How do you do?
Hi, good morning, Hal. Thanks. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you for coming. Why don't you start out by explaining to our listeners about Benjamin Rush, Benjamin Rush Institute, and what you're doing, and add anything to your bio that I didn't include that you'd like our listeners to know about you.
Okay, well, let's focus, you know, on the Benjamin Rush Institute. It's been around for about 5 years or so. Started by Sally Pipes, who runs the Pacific Research Institute. Started her life out as a Canadian and has come to the United States after studying economics, and was really concerned about the trend that healthcare was taking in the United States after having had some pretty horrendous experience with the Canadian system. And she thought that it would be important for medical students to have a better understanding about what was going on in healthcare policy. So she started Benjamin Rush Institute initially as a project within the Pacific Research Institute, which is a free market think tank that's based out here in California. And then for the past year and a half now, we've been completely independent. So we're a nonprofit organization, and our goal is to help medical students and physicians really understand the basics about economics and give them a platform to start discussing within medical schools the ideas of markets, freedom of choice, and how government involvement in healthcare has evolved, and the side effects. You know, it's one of the things that every doctor needs to be extremely careful about. Every intervention has side effects, and sometimes the side effects are worse than the benefit you're trying to create. But it's been something that's been missing. So we are nonprofit, educational, and primarily work with, at this point, with medical students to have them set up chapters at their schools. And then the National Office of Benjamin Rush Institute will help them bring in speakers on a wide variety of topics, medical ethics issues, health policy issues, and also some of the innovations that are going on in healthcare delivery, which there's some pretty exciting stuff that's happening out there, and we want to make sure the students know about it.
So, Beth, what kind of reception do you get from students when you start talking about the things that Benjamin Rush stands for, and is there a desire on the part of the medical students to hear this?
You know, it seems like at every medical school there is a small core of people who already understand how that intersection of economics and politics and healthcare and how important it is to know that. But in general, I think it's pretty clear in the United States that our institutions of higher learning are very, very skeptical about the role of markets and profit. And, you know, we've really come to think of cronyism as a creature of markets, where it's exactly the opposite. We couldn't have all the cronies out there if government wasn't giving them special privileges. So there's that underlying bias that these students have developed because of their exposure in our colleges to that skepticism about markets.
Do you think that's perpetuated in medical school?
And it absolutely is. It absolutely is. You know, the medical students are rightfully very focused on becoming doctors, and yet the way things have gone in this country, we can't escape politics. You know, this country has decided to make medicine a political issue, you know, by saying that the government's going to pay for, you know, before the ACA, it was, you know, close to 50%, and we're going to be well over 60 to 70% of our healthcare dollars are going to have some government tax funding behind it. So you can't escape that, and yet that's what people want. It and doctors need to know what those side effects are. The curriculum in medical school has very little time to discuss health policy, and whatever time is available, they are more comfortable with government solutions. So we need the Benjamin Rush Institute in there just to add some balance to the conversation, to broaden out the perspectives that are there and bring that free market perspective into the medical schools. Otherwise, they won't hear it.
So
they're not
going
to get it from their professors.
So how do you do that?
Well, at this point, what we've been doing is a lot of word of mouth, and that's probably my biggest challenge is having medical students know that the Benjamin Rush Institute exists. And we get contacted periodically by students who hear about us through a variety of ways, different organizations, their peers, because, you know, they all go to different undergrads, and then they spread out to across the country to different medical schools. So we get this word of mouth going. They'll contact us and say, hey, I want to do this at my school. And then we help them go through the process of setting up and becoming an official chapter at their school. So it's all school-based. They're a school-based organization, and then we help them coordinate and with the funding. Once they're set up, then we say, here's some ideas of the kinds of topics to cover. Here's speakers, and we'll pay for pizza if you're doing lunch, and, you know, go a little bit fancier when we do our debates. But that's sort of how it's been working. And the challenge, like I said, is to get the word out so that people know about us, and the students who are concerned that these issues be discussed more broadly will be able to contact us, and we can help them.
Can you share with our listeners some of the debates that Benjamin Rush has sponsored already?
Oh, yeah, and they're all on our website, BenjaminRushInstitute.org. I've been working very hard to make sure that we get good videos of the debates so that people who aren't able to attend in person can still access them. We've had a debate. The most recent debate was last spring. We haven't really gotten into this school year's set of events yet, but we had one at Ohio State about should there be a market in human organs, which was all about kidney sales, and that was very interesting. There's a lot. It's a controversial, complicated, and very emotional topic, so that was fascinating. We had one in New York last year that was on malpractice, and instead of having, you know, two sides debating each other, we had a panel, and each one of them took a different point of view, trying to come up, you know, present solutions to what do we do about malpractice in the United States. We've had them have one on the Independent Payment Advisory Board. Is that the way to control Medicare spending? And just the Medicare itself, what about Medicare reform? People know that we need to do something to change it. It's not sustainable the way it is. Is the defined contributions the way to go? We've had a number of ones, single-payer versus more market solutions. So those are, that gives you kind of a variety.
So it's not just saying to the students, we think that you need to think about alternative ways of delivering medicine. It's really a way of exposing medical students to a different kind of thought process, something that they're not receiving in the medical schools.
Yes, definitely. I mean, and what's really interesting, here's a great story. So we've had a chapter at what used to be Mount Sinai in New York City. It's now Icahn School of Medicine. Had a chapter there for probably about 4 years. And just last year, the school approached the student leader to say, hey, we need you to bring in somebody to talk more about a market-oriented way at this mandatory curriculum, because in the past what they would have, oh, we bring different sides, you know, we have the single payer and we have the people that are for the ACA, we've got different points of view here. And he had challenged them on that, and they said, well, we can't find anybody that to talk about markets. He says, well, I will. So there ended up being this 2-hour session that was part of the mandatory curriculum for these students. And they were able to hear Ovick Roy come talk about, here's some non-government ways to start thinking about solving the problems that we're facing.
So when the students hear these, quote, alternative points of view, is it like an epiphany for these people? Do they wonder why they haven't heard this before?
Sometimes. It's really interesting. Another great interaction we had was there's an organization that's very powerful on medical campuses, the American Medical Students Association, and they are very, very strong ACA supporters. They had a national conference last fall, and we approached them with having Lee Gross, who I believe was one of your guests on a previous
radio show. Yes, he was. And Beth, we're coming up to a hard break. You got about 15 seconds, and then we can pick this up in the next segment.
Okay. So Lee Gross came and spoke to the AMSA students, and they were blown away by his ability to take care of uninsured and underinsured through a market-based program.
Oh yeah, that always is a wow moment, and
yeah.
We had that at Steamboat just a few weeks ago. So we'll pick this up and talk more about Benjamin Rush Institute with our guest Beth Haynes in the next segment. This is Hal Schurz in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs.com. 4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is Dr. Hal Schurz with my guest, Dr. Beth Haynes, the Benjamin Rush Institute. We've been talking about the Benjamin Rush Institute and its role in educating young medical students around the country in free market principles and other aspects of healthcare that they don't receive in their normal medical school curriculum. Beth, who is Benjamin Rush?
So Benjamin Rush was one of five physicians who signed the Declaration of Independence. He was the most well-known of those five, which is why we chose him, and was a fascinating guy. He really felt it was very important for physicians to be quite principled. He was an advocate for humane treatment of the mentally ill and was a staunch abolitionist. So in addition to being a physician, he was also involved with the political scene of his day, and we thought he would be a good figurehead for our organization.
I agree. I can't think of anybody better to promote some of the projects and core ideas of Benjamin Rush. So how many schools right now would you say have chapters?
So we have 20 official chapters. There's three other schools that I interact with, I call affiliates, where they had a club or a chapter that they already had started but had enough shared values that we end up helping them sponsor debates and events. And then there's about three or four others right now that are in various stages of developing.
So developing a chapter, does that, there's two questions that I have. Number one, developing a new chapter and then continuing an existing chapter, because you get the champions who come to you and say, I want to start a chapter, and then they get busy with their clinical rotations in medical school and go off into residency training. How does a chapter continue to stay viable?
So what we're trying to do is really get the students thinking as soon as they contact, how is this going to keep going? Because that is the challenge. The students have much more time, although they're very busy, much more time during their first 2 years where they're a lot more textbook basic science learning. And then I think of it as sort of dropping off the cliff once they hit their clinical rotations, and they really just don't have time during the third year. Sometimes they'll circle back during the fourth year electives and are able to help out a little bit more. But if we get a first year, it's like, okay, by the end of your first year, start thinking about how you're going to get somebody and recruit in the fall so that you get the new first year and train them. We do have a conference, a leadership training conference that we've had twice now, and it's going to be an annual event where we get the students together and do some leadership training, skills about developing their chapter and running a chapter, having it be successful, as well as bring in speakers about healthcare policy and just give them some good information.
Where did you have those meetings?
The first one was in Philadelphia, and then last year's was in Denver. This year we're hoping to do it in Washington, D.C., and take advantage of all the health policy wonks out there.
And what time of year do you usually do that?
In the spring, with the students, we want the students to have had a fall semester to expose Benjamin Rush to the first year so that we can get as many first-year students to come to the conference as possible so that we can help them keep that chapter going.
Mm-hmm. And you've shared with us the experience at Mount Sinai in New York. How do the other schools react once the Benjamin Rush chapter is started?
We've had different responses. Sometimes there's absolutely no problem at all. It goes through without any difficulty. And some of the schools give the chapters additional money for funding the programs. And then every once in a while you'll hit a school that'll say, well, we don't want you know, we already have an organization here that's talking about healthcare policy. Of course, it's all healthcare policy that is dominated by government-oriented solutions. But one time we had the students say, well, this, you're just going to create dissension and division, you know, and we're like, no, we're just going to bring in diversity. That's, you like that, right? We want diverse ideas. But once we've held a few of our talks or debates, then the schools love it. And even those students who don't agree with us, who continue to want a significant role for government in healthcare, they love the ability to be exposed to different ideas and start thinking about things from a different point of view. So we aren't out there to ram things down people's throats. We're not trying to proselytize. It's really creating a broader conversation. Medical students are medical students for a reason, not lawyers. And sometimes that's because those of us who like want to go in and be doctors, we want to fix everything. We want to care for people. We don't want controversy. But I try and remind the students that the whole point of the debates is to sharpen our thinking, and we want to pit the best proponents of each idea on each side, just like you would in a sports event. You know, you always do better as an athlete when you are competing against somebody who's really strong, and that makes you a better competitor. So these debates improve the quality of the conversation, the debate, and the thinking on these issues, and they like it.
So what are you hoping to accomplish? And have you do you think that you've had some wins already?
We've definitely had some wins already. Like I said, the students come in thinking, oh, well, you guys just are paranoid anti-government people. And it's like, no, we're thoughtful. And also the other times when I've been there, it's like, well, you just want people to die in the streets. And it's,
yeah, we've heard that a lot, haven't we?
Absolutely. And it's so interesting. I think one of the big victories is being able to communicate. You know, we have the same goal here. We want affordable, accessible, quality medical care for everyone. But what we're disagreeing on is why we have the lack of all those things in the United States, mm-hmm. and how we're going to fix the problem. And yet we really do have that common goal in mind. And once you create that bridge, it's a lot easier to try and move forward and say, look, we care about these people.
Right.
It's a tragedy that so many people are priced out of affordable health care.
Right, right. I think that the Benjamin Rush Institute is very much on the same page as Docs for Patient Care and the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, whose mission is the preservation of the doctor-patient relationship and the ability to have healthcare freedom in this country without some entity dictating to you what you must have. And the only difference is that Benjamin Rush is trying to get the young doctors to start thinking about this before they get too far down the road. Isn't that right?
There's some big issues that are being pushed in the medical school curriculum. One of them is population health. The other thing is, I think it's a euphemism, what's known as evidence-based medicine.
Yes.
You know, who can be against evidence, right? So
right.
They claim to be evidence-based. But these are really very controversial topics that the students need to hear a different point of view.
Right.
If you're treating somebody, the population, based on a bell curve, and 5%, you know, fall off the bell curve, that's 50 million Americans who
that's
aren't
right.
going to fit in that population-based, you know, treatment guideline.
Well, the population argument or this whole concept is also part of social justice.
Yes. That was one of our debates a couple of years ago, was what is the effect of pushing social justice as an ethic? And there's a big push to put that into the medical ethics. You know, and what effect does that have on an individual patient when you're telling doctors they have to think about resource expenditures and the effects on entire society?
Right.
You can't focus on what's best for your individual patients.
No,
so
well,
those are the kinds of conversations that really need to be, students need to be aware of.
Well, that's exactly right, and it would be interesting just to explain to students, and I'm sure you've done this already, that it goes back to Greek times with Plato and Hippocrates, and they had a fundamental debate how to take care of people. Plato said that we needed to take care of society, and Hippocrates said, no, we have to take care of each individual. And Hippocrates won out, and that's how we got to the system of healthcare that we currently have right now. And it seems like there's revisionist history and thinking at play right now.
There's a lot that's going on. Also, all the solutions that government comes up with are trying to decrease demand, to cut back, this expenditure that they have, which, I understand that. But if you look throughout the history of the world, the way we have solved the lack of resources, poverty, clean water, shelter, all those things, it's not by, husbanding tightly all these resources. It's by creating an abundant supply through the free enterprise and entrepreneurial systems. That's the way we create wealth and prosperity and solve the problems of lack of resources. And
absolutely.
So that's one of the things that we're trying to make clear to students. I mean, the students, medical students, there was three studies a couple of years ago of medical students, and 80% of the medical students were in favor of the ACA. So this is 2012.
Okay.
But that same group of students, 40% of them said, yeah, but I really don't know anything about the ACA, but I'm still on for it.
just 40%? I would think that that number would be higher because I don't think that people who voted for it in Washington know what the ACA was about.
No, and nobody knows. Well, they couldn't, because even the way that the law was written, there were so many things that were vague, and as we've seen, needed to have many more regulations written. But it's really interesting. So we're trying to also educate them just plainly what the law says, and I don't not put any spin on it. Just what does the law say? And there's a variety of laws that have gone on. What's the history of government involvement in medicine? Because we have not had a free market in U.S. healthcare for over 100 years.
No, that's right. And it would be interesting, to try to get that into all the curricula in medical school, just the history of healthcare in the U.S. And it's really astounding how few people even know about this. And practicing physicians, I'm talking about, not medical students.
And I think physicians are in a good, the way we're taught to look at a whole system, the whole system of the patient. If you, as a physician, give a patient a drug to attack a specific, let's say, a tumor in the body, and it completely wipes out that tumor, but in the process you also wipe out the bone marrow, you injure the electrical system of the heart, and create some brain injury, you overall have not helped the patient. We have to think system-wide about what we're doing with our healthcare policy.
Right. It's almost like winning the battle but losing the war.
Yeah. And so the ACA, did that help a certain number of people? Yes.
Right.
There are definite winners in the ACA.
There are. And we'll get to that in just a couple of minutes when we get back to the third segment on the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio with my guest, Dr. Beth Haynes. This is Dr. Hal Schurz. In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs.com. 4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is Hal Schurz with my guest, Beth Haynes, and we're talking about educating young doctors and some of the shortfalls in their education today in America's medical schools, and how the Benjamin Rush Institute is filling that gap with information that they need to have in order to be a well-rounded contributor to healthcare in America these days. Beth, we were talking about how Benjamin Rush is reaching out to the medical schools to try to get more people involved, and that's a huge task with all 130 medical schools now in the United States?
And rising.
What about the residents, the doctors who graduate from medical schools who are in their residency programs? Aren't they just as in need of this kind of information? Because I train residents every day in my practice and what I do, and they seem to seek me out because they know that I'm a source of information that they cannot receive from their professors at the university, at Emory University, or anywhere else, I'm sure, in university settings around the country. Is that an ultimate goal of the Benjamin Rush Institute?
You know, we haven't gotten involved with any of the residents. And since we've only been around about 5 years, we only have a few graduate, leaders who are now residents. There's a handful of them. But that internship year, you really focus on internship.
Surviving.
On getting through it, that's right. Now that there's these limited hours spent, who knows what's going to happen. So I would love to have residents be involved, and there's no reason that they couldn't have a chapter. There's no reason that physicians couldn't have a chapter and start thinking about bringing speakers in to grand rounds or setting up talks outside of the hospital or within their local community to keep these issues alive. But that hasn't happened yet. And with limited resources, we've just primarily focused on the medical students. I also do have two chapters that are outside of the traditional medical schools. We've got one pharmacy student who's very interested at Ohio Northern. And we also have a chapter at a podiatry school down in Florida.
That's great.
I talked recently to some dental students in San Francisco. And, all these various health care providers are going to be tremendously affected, not just medical students and physicians. They all need to be thinking about how this is going to impinge on their ability to provide excellent quality of care to their patients.
It seems to me that one good way to really help Benjamin Rush, and for those of you listening to this who think that this is exciting, it might be, especially if you're a physician in a city with a medical school, or if you are a parent of a medical student and you think that this is an important project, but especially for physicians to reach out to some of the medical students if you have an opportunity to interact with them and explain the Benjamin Rush Institute to them and see if you as a physician might be willing to help sponsor it and get off the ground. What do you think about that?
I think that's great. I really encourage people to see what we're about by looking at the BenjaminRushInstitute.org website. We've got a blog. We post we put up posts about various conferences that are going on with a free market bent in the throughout the country. We've got the debates up there. We have a Facebook page. You can email us by emailing at BenjaminRushInstitute@gmail.com. But yes, please spread the word, take a look at what we're doing. Would love to get more inquiries and definitely more students and more chapters.
Beth, you've been doing this now, what? It's been about 2 years now, hasn't it?
2 years. Yep.
And you seem to be as enthusiastic today as when this opportunity first was presented to you. What is it about this that just turns you on?
Well, I just really love working with the medical students. After, you know, I mean, it's great. Docs for Patient Care is great, but I'll tell you, those docs are discouraged. And understandably so, right? And a lot of us are at the end of our career and just feeling like, how am I going to be able to affect any kind of change in my professional lifetime? It's discouraging. But these students, they're bright, they're dedicated, they are optimistic and have the energy and interest in, we still have to solve the problems. And so they recharge my batteries. They're great.
It's like blobs of protoplasm, and you have an opportunity to get to them before they've been hardened.
I don't know. They come incredibly
opinionated,
smart and
opinionated,
interested, and yet, you know, they. It's not so much that. I don't know. I don't think I'm shaping ideas as much as just planting seeds,
right?
And getting them to think a little bit different and giving them the opportunity to think broader.
Mm-hmm.
And they love it. They'll grab it. They're sponges. They're just soaking things up.
Right.
And it's great.
Well, you know, it's as somebody, as I said, who is regularly involved with young doctors, I think this is incredibly important, and it's fulfilling a role, a niche that was missing, that is absolutely critical, and my hat's off to what you're doing, the work that you're accomplishing. I think that it's something that not just the medical community, but the community of all patients should support and get behind. I'll give that email again in the last segment so that we can get people to help. You mentioned a couple of minutes ago about the workplace limitations and why maybe residents can now have the time to get involved in Benjamin Rush. That's very different than when you and I were training, Beth, these workplace limitations and some other differences in training of young doctors. What do you think the differences are in the training of the young doctors today compared to 10 years ago?
You know, it's an interesting thing. I think that there were definitely some abuses at one point which triggered some of this, where people were so exhausted and made such demands that it was above and beyond what was safe. But I think the pendulum is swinging too far the other direction. And they're starting to do some studies with this, so it'll be interesting to see what comes with this, that there's so many handoffs now because of the shortened work hours. Inexperienced interns are having to turn over patients so frequently that there's actually more mistakes being made than when they were working the longer hours. And yes, they were tired, but that fatigue wasn't as much of a problem as perhaps this turnover that's occurring with inexperienced interns. The other problem that's happening is because there's not the continuity with the intern who is really supposed to be the one that's managing the case, the more experienced residents are having to be involved and being pulled out of their supervisory position and being more involved in the trenches, and that's not allowing them to to have that umbrella of safety and supervision that they used to spend their time focusing on, and that's also adding to it. So it's going to be interesting to see how this evolves. I don't think that the current rules and laws are beneficial to patient care or to physician training, and we'll see the pendulum swing back the other direction as we get more data.
You know, I hope that you're right about that, because, you know, in terms of the once things get instituted, it's very hard to put the genie back in the bottle, so to speak. And I just hope that you're right about that. But do you think that this is this trend, this change in how we train our young doctors, is hurting their ability to practice medicine and ultimately affecting how patients are being cared for?
I'm biased. I went through one system, right, just like you did. But there, I just don't see how you can gain the understanding of how does a particular disease process evolve in the acute setting. If you're chunking it out like that, somebody comes in with an MI, it's really important to be able to see how that MI evolves and what your various interventions are doing. And if you have to go home, you're not seeing it. On the other hand, you do have to recharge and get enough sleep. So we've got to figure out what that right balance is. But it does concern me that we're losing some very important aspects of continuity of care and disease understanding, observation skills with the new laws.
Well, you know, I've had the opportunity to talk to many people in Docs for Patient Care, as you know, and they share all kinds of stories with us and on our medical blogs that we are participating in as well. And it's very worrisome that they've cut the number of hours young doctors are allowed to be in the hospital. They're trying to truncate the training, so they decrease the number of years for some of these residency programs. And now we're producing physicians who lack the same skill set that the doctors had 20 years ago or 30 years ago. And this is something that, I think is going to impact the kind of care that you and I receive when we need it.
Yeah, and it's an interesting problem because it's been going on. Don't you remember your attending saying, "Oh, nobody knows how to listen to a heart correctly anymore"?
Right.
They just order a test.
That's right.
You know, so this is not anything new.
It's not.
This has been a trend, but we do need to be aware of it and try and really get back to those basic physical exam skills,
right,
observation, but it all comes back to that doctor-patient relationship and having the time and ability to really focus on that individual patient.
And we're going to talk about that in the last segment. I want to wrap this up. This is Hal Schurz on In America's Web Radio and the Doctor's Lounge. In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org, and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge. This is Hal Schurz with my guest, Beth Haynes, from the Benjamin Rush Institute. We're talking about educating America's young doctors today. And we've talked about the work of the Benjamin Rush Institute. And we left off talking about how physician training in this country has really changed over the last 10 years. You know, Beth, I think that I've seen the change in the doctors and heard people say, well, now with the way medicine is going these days, we're going to see different kinds of people applying to medical schools, different kind of talent. What do you think is happening as far as that's concerned?
You know, I've read those, I've heard those, and it would make sense to me that that's going to happen. All I can say is right now the students that I interact with are dedicated, they're smart, they're hardworking, enthusiastic, and bright. So we'll have to see. You know, I share those concerns. I don't see it right now. I do share those concerns. I mean, just even the practice of medicine is shifting more towards a 9-to-5 attitude. When I was trained in family practice, we saw patients in our clinics and we followed our patients in the hospital. And with the hospitalist system, it's a rare doctor who does that anymore. That has to affect patient care.
It does. I think that's for many doctors, the last time that they set foot in a hospital is the last day of their residency. Isn't that right? For many specialists.
Yeah. And you know,
and primary care doctors for that matter.
Right, right. And it's a fine balance of really, if you're not putting a lot of patients in the hospital, then it's nice to have somebody who is, that's what they do, they're expert. But then you start losing those skills, they atrophy, and it's part of that continuity problem.
Well, this is exactly what we were talking about just a few minutes ago in the last segment, where people were accused of not being able to listen to a heart and just ordering a test. When you lose the skill sets that are necessary to take care of patients, then you become more of a triage officer. You listen to your patient. They tell you that something's bothering them. You order a test and send them off to somebody else to take care of them.
And that's one of the exciting things about these direct pay practices that are starting to blossom more and more. And if you've got a smaller panel of patients, you're not just 15 minutes then or 7 minutes. I mean, there's even talk about the 7-minute power visit. It's like, what can you find out about a person in 7 minutes? And so that if you've got this direct pay, you can have that ongoing personal relationship. If they're in the hospital, you're aware of it, you know of it, you don't have so many patients that you can't follow them through that and at least be involved and be their advocate. I mean, one of the things that I've been doing just personally is being an advocate for neighbors and for family members as an educated advocate. It's just,
we're all going to need that, right?
Don't have somebody knowing what's going on right now. People, too much falls through the cracks.
That's a new definition of the word navigator.
Yeah, right.
You're a medical navigator, and I think that we all need an advocate or a navigator these days to get through the complexity of the system, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So circling back, you know, on what we've just said, do you think that that doctors are telling their kids not to go into medicine?
It's not a matter of what I think; it's a matter of what is. And when I try and find students, medical students, I'm not finding them through physicians because their kids aren't in medical school anymore. It's I'm finding people through other ways. But it's not through physicians.
And yet, I have to agree with you that the quality of these medical schools, the medical students, is really, really incredibly high. I don't know if that has to do with great inflation. I don't know what the criteria are for looking at these kids. But when I get involved in the interviews for the residency at Emory and looking at their curriculum vitae, their resumes, they've done some incredible things. And my nephew who just went back to do his senior year in college wants to go into medicine, and I had to arrange for him some research opportunities this summer. There's a certain checklist of things that these kids have to accomplish, hoops they have to jump through in order to get to medical school. So even though we're telling our kids not to go into medicine, there's still a lot of kids who want to go down this road.
It's still highly competitive. I think we have really bright people going into it. And it's a matter, I think, of showing them that there's ways that you can really keep the patient your center focus, and that's the joy of being a physician, right? That's the joy. It's all about the interactions that you have with your patients. You know, we earn good money, but that's, you know, you can earn better money other ways, and it's really the fabulous interaction with the patients. And so how do we do that from a multiple point of view? I mean, and the push when I was in school was, okay, we got to treat the whole patient. And by that, they meant think about the mind, the body, the spirit. Well, I think we also need to start thinking about the economics of the patient and what their resources are, and helping them, guide them through what's the best way to make decisions with the pros and cons of the various treatment regimens. And unfortunately, a lot of the what's being pushed is, well, don't worry, you know, you shouldn't have to worry about costs. Let the government tell you what, you know, we're going to have these experts decide what's cost effective and what's not cost effective. But you deprive patients of being able to make their own value decisions when you do that.
Well, not only that, but when you rely on others to make these decisions, or you try to take physicians out of this process, then you open up the door to abuses. You're basically letting the fox in the hen house, and that's unfortunately why we're in the mess we're in right now, right, Beth? We've been told for years, as physicians who were in training back when you and I trained, don't worry about economics, or don't worry about politics or policy. Let people who are smarter than you do that. You focus on what you're good at, healthcare.
Right, and we can't anymore. It's a political entity now, and doctors need to be involved in the politics and educate themselves on that.
You know, you mentioned Correct. Direct primary care a few minutes ago, and I think that, you know, I look at this not only as an exciting opportunity and a way to get doctors more engaged, but I think it's also a shot in the arm for family medicine. Lee Gross, a good friend of both of ours, who is a champion of this, has been on the show and discussed how a doctor, a family doctor, who is struggling in the current system fee-for-service medicine with diminishing reimbursement, can actually turn things around with a direct primary care model and become financially viable, and at the same time offer something incredibly important to patients who can't afford the high cost of insurance or who can't get insurance at all. And I'm wondering, when you talk about this to the young doctors, you know, there's been a push to get away from primary care medicine because it just was not financially lucrative enough for them to pay their loans back from medical school, so they're looking at specialty medicine. But with this model, this changes the whole equation. Is this something that you're talking to the students about?
Oh, absolutely, and they're lapping it up because, you know, it's a way to maintain independence. So a number of students have said, boy, I had written off primary care until I heard about this model, and now I'm really excited about it. It's the image of medicine at its best, you know, taking care of patients and their families and really being part of the community very directly, and having the time to do it and earning enough so that you can pay your bills and feel good. But really, it's that it's that connection with the patient. So, yeah, there are a number of them. A student say, wow, I'm back thinking about primary care again because of this.
You might actually want to go to the American Academy of Family Practice and get them to sponsor Benjamin Rush. You're the best advocate that they have.
Well, I haven't been involved with them for years, so that's. But I actually have been thinking about doing something like that. You know, how do we get this better known? Correct.
Well, you know, I think that there's so much to talk about in view of this, and we're coming to the end of our last segment. So Beth, wrap this up. You've got about 2 minutes. Why don't you tell people again how they can get involved with Benjamin Rush and why this is important?
So Benjamin Rush is out there to try and bring a broader perspective on healthcare policy to medical students on medical campuses throughout the country and in any area of health professional education. We want to set up chapters. We help fund the students so they can bring in really nationally known top quality speakers and set up debates to sharpen thinking and really clarify the issues that are involved. We've got a website at BenjaminRushInstitute.org. People can join as supporting members if you're not a physician. Donate there. It's really easy. Nice big button on there. Or you can email us with questions at BenjaminRushInstitute@gmail.com is our email, and that's on the website as well. But we need more medical students to know about this, that this is an option, and we are there to support them, bringing in a wide variety of speakers on medical ethics, healthcare policy, and exciting, innovating new ways of practicing medicine and helping solve the problems that our country faces in healthcare.
Well, folks, go and tell your doctors when you go to the doctor next time about the Benjamin Rush Institute. Give them the information you've just heard and get them excited so that they can help to fix the problems that we're having right now. Beth, thanks for joining us today. This was a great discussion, and I hope to have you back.
Thanks so much, Hal. It was fun being here.
This is Hal Schurz on Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. Thanks for being with us today.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.